Welcome to the Massive Report Podcast, your premier destination for everything Columbus Crew SC. Join your hosts, Bart Logan, Alex Stanek, Patrick Murphy, and Ralph Schudel, as they discuss all the happenings in Major League Soccer and your Columbus Crew SC. The show is going to begin shortly. Our troubles run away from this concrete jungle. By the day under the moonlight, my people will be all right. Turn darkness like the rise, and I see hope in our eyes. Africa will stand as one. I wish I all see the sun. Gonna take a look to drive me away.
No countdown, Ralph? What the heck? Oh, well. Hey, buddies. It is the Massive Report brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton. Available at a craft beverage retailer of any repute near you. And the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street at 21 and Up Barcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. It is episode 240, not to be confused with E-Fody. We're recording on August the 7th for you. My name is Bart, and we'll do a quick roll call of my friends that are joining me tonight. We've got Patrick Murphy of the Massive Report. Patrick, what's going on?
Not much, just looking forward to talking some big crew news.
There is a lot of news for us to cover this evening. We'll be running down the field like Danny O'Rourke, getting that mileage in. We've also got Ralph Schudel with us of the Massive Report. Ralph, what's going on with you?
In addition to covering massive crew news, pardon the pun, I have discovered that I am fighting an addiction to Football Manager 2017 at the moment. So pray for me.
Ruh-roh, that is a dangerous and dark road to head down. Fortunately, maybe someone to help lead you out there is Alex Stanek of Massive Report Podcast and the Sunshine Brigade. Alex, how are we doing, sir?
Not too bad. I'm actually playing Football Manager on my phone right now.
This is how you get just really, really great podcast content. Everybody, we're well prepared. We're reading off of our notes. We are focused on this discussion. And we will move forward by breaking a little bit of news. Well, not really official news, kind of official news, sort of news. Patrick Murphy, why don't you let us know what the situation is with Pedro Santos before we get into the rundown?
Yeah, it's, obviously it was, a rumored report over the weekend, confirmed by the Dispatch. I believe on Saturday or Sunday, and then it sounds like the team is planning on officially announcing Pedro's addition tomorrow. I got a call from someone in the PR department making sure that I would be at practice tomorrow. They said they couldn't say more, but we all know what that means. So yeah, it looks like this will be a done deal, likely officially announced tomorrow, assuming everything goes as planned. I know he's already past his medical and whatnot, so things should be good on that front. He was coming off a bit of an ankle injury from early in the season, or from last season, I think. But anyway, yes, so Columbus looks to be adding another winger, attacking player. I know there was a lot of questions about why they would be adding another winger. I don't know if he's specifically a guy who would stay out on the right wing. You know, that's where he primarily played in Portugal, it looks like, but, in MLS, maybe a guy who can fit in as one of the two underneath Ola Kamara in this three-man back line that they've been using. I'm not quite sure, without having seen too much of him, if he's a potential replacement for Federico Higuain. I know we talk about that a lot, like who's next there. I don't know if this guy necessarily fits that bill, but a guy who they were pretty high on over at Braga for a long time. He was the captain of the team and then was hurt, like I mentioned. Came back this season. They've got some young guys that they like, it looks like. They kind of just went in another direction. This is somebody that the crew have been scouting for quite a while, back to as far as 2016. So it's a guy they did their homework on. I know there were a lot of rumors about potential players, but I think this is a guy that, they think makes sense for what they want to do. And, you know, potentially down the road, obviously, Kakuta Mane is not promised to come back next year. He's in the last year of his contract. There's always been the speculation about Ethan Finley. So, you know, kind of an insurance guy there. Plus, he's a little bit older, 29. This team, as we've talked about before, is very young. So kind of adding some more veteran presence, I think, could be useful.
And I think one of the other interesting things not to get lost in there is the fact Portuguese, the Portuguese speaker, might be helpful with Artur communicating on the field. Both of them be Portuguese native speakers, Artur the Brazilian. But looking at this, this is a player who came up through the Portuguese youth system, played for the Portuguese U19 team, and then, as you mentioned, Patrick, at SC Braga since 2013, with 18 goals in 76 total appearances, did hit a little bit of an injury issue, I believe, last year, that there's some recovery from, and maybe some lingering issues. But you mentioned kind of the insurance aspect of it, but as Tony Precourt, the owner of Crew SC, mentioned today on Twitter when he kind of plugged this, we assume, signing, he billed this as it's a third DP player, which when you look at Frederico Higuain, obviously he's in the middle of what looks like a career year, or at least has the opportunity to do it. But when you look at the other DP for Columbus, Jonathan Mensa, he's had some growing pains so far. Is this a player, guys, that Crew can expect some growing pains with, and can they allow that if they want to make a run this season at the postseason?
I'm not sure that there are going to be growing pains with this particular player. I think a winger is somebody who's a little bit easier to kind of integrate into a system. They basically just receive the ball, run down the wing, and cut in or cross the ball into a striker.
You make it sound so easy.
Oh, it's super easy. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's we've had great luck with all these guys. No, but I do think it's easier than a center back, where you have to kind of build a relationship with a player, and one mistake means you're probably conceding a goal. They'll be able to get him out there fairly quickly, I would imagine. And I watched a little bit of footage of him on YouTube, and I like what I see. He seems like the kind of player who can deliver an accurate cross, which is something that has sometimes been lacking from this Crew SC team this year. And he's also a player who seems to have a tendency to cut inside towards the middle and take shots from outside the box, accurate shots, shots that end up turning into goals. So both of those things, I think, are things that are really going to benefit this year's team. And, yeah, he did have some injury problems recently, but hopefully those are in the past. And if he can kind of refine that form that he had in Portugal last season, I think we have one heck of a player.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I did a little bit of research on him Saturday, too, when I finally got or first got wind of the news that we might be signing him. And a player that I saw, much like what you were saying, Alex, is he's very good with crossing. I've noticed that he really thrives in build-up play as well, which is something that, you know, sometimes Crew have been kind of criticized for not being quick enough on the build-up, you know, and he seemed very, very confident on the ball. Another thing, too, that we've been lacking this season is somebody who's been kind of a set-piece specialist. Numerous times on goals, he was getting, he was scoring from basically improbable angles on set pieces. Sometimes he'd be kind of tricky and kind of dupe the wall and sneak the ball immediately underneath the wall, or he had some, you know, crazy precision where he's nailing it upper 90. So I'm excited to see what he can do in Major League Soccer, where set pieces are very important. And, you know, I mean, I shouldn't say that, they're pretty important in every league, but, you know, it seems like there's particularly a really nice emphasis on areas around the box where you take free kicks from.
Well, it's interesting that you mention, you know, free kicks especially, because that it was the realm of, or is at least until further notice, the realm of Frederico Higuain, of course, the other designated player, one of the other designated players on Columbus, and a guy himself who was in the news last week with reports from the Dispatch that this season is his, at least he believes, will be his last in Columbus, not necessarily last in the United States, poignantly, per those quotes. Looking at that, taking that into account, taking into account that Santos is a guy who can play those free kicks as well. Is this a move that might push or exacerbate the situation with Frederico Higuain?
It's interesting the timing of these, because I think these moves, well, the move and the news that Federico is likely not going to be back, are separate. While, you know, this may come as a potential replacement, we'll see how comfortable he is in various positions. But, you know, I do think that, you know, they weren't planning on trying to bring somebody in specifically to replace Federico. Obviously, you know, they know that Federico's getting up there in years. He's obviously dealt with injuries last year and now this knee injury that's kept him out these last few games. So, you know, obviously you have to think that they're thinking about that. But, you know, it sounds like from reading the quotes that that Andrew got at practice last Thursday, that, you know, this was something that Greg and Federico talked about, maybe even just as recently as that day. They, you know, according to the article, they spent about 30 minutes sitting off to the side talking before anyone came back. And it, you know, seemed like a little bit of a surprise when Federico brought this up. So obviously a surprise to us. You know, Federico's always talked about how much he likes being in Columbus and things like that. So, you know, very interesting situation. But as opposed for this new signing, you know, I don't know if this will be the answer or if they'll, you know, there are future moves that that will have to fit in. But, you know, Greg Berhalter also told the Dispatch that he hopes to, you know, try and figure something out with Federico. So, you know, while I think he's probably out the door, I don't think it's entirely certain that he won't be back next year, but we'll kind of have to see how that goes.
One of the things that I found particularly interesting about Higuain's interview and talks with Andrew Erickson was that, you know, he said that one key line that he said he believes it's the end of a cycle. And I really just kind of want to know what that means to him in terms of, you know, how he feels his career is progressing. Is he frustrated by, you know, lingering injuries and stuff of that nature that he's had occurred? Or is he just feel like his time's simply up in Columbus? You know, and it's just for a player that's as, you know, majestic as he can be on the ball with, you know, his megs and his, you know, flicks and everything that Higuain does so well. I'd be curious to sit back and think it'd be similar to giving a 2 weeks notice on your job. You know, if he feels like he owes it to the club to tell them, hey, I'm definitely leaving, you need to start looking other places. Or if, you know, he's just kind of just being a good guy rather than doing the Neymar, I'm gone 2 weeks, and then he's out of the club like that. So I don't think necessarily Santos is going to be brought in as a replacement. If he fits into the number 10, that's great. A couple of Portuguese people who've made their stop by Massive Report told us that he is capable of being in a, you know, central role, although he doesn't really thrive there. But I'm not sure this was made as a reactionary move. I think this was something that's been kind of percolating for a long time.
That said, if it has been percolating, I think there are a couple issues. First of all, where would we be, or what would the reaction be from fans if it were Kai Kamara making these remarks rather than Pipe Higuain? And also, if, again, not to, you know, bring Kai into this too much, but you look at last year, the Kai Kamara trade and the lead up to that, and that looked like kind of a fork in the road where Greg Berhalter could have gone one direction, you know, Pipa or Kai, and Pipa, you know, ostensibly that's the rest of the team, the rest of the locker room. Kai had sort of isolated himself. You make that decision, and now a year, a little bit more than a year later, and you're seeing Higuain is ready to be on the way out. Do you think that there was something that was communicated with Greg Berhalter where he's not happy with the direction that this has gone, his role with the team? You look at these last couple of weeks, I know there's been the injury, nagging injuries, but there have been plenty of questions. We've dug into it, what Higuain's role looks like with three in the back. And do you think he kind of feels like that maybe he doesn't, as he said, I don't think Columbus will lose too much without me?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think the situation with Kai, touching on that for a second, I think that's very different. I mean, I think the problem with Kai was that he brought his teammates into it and badmouthed his teammates in public. And for me, that's a deal breaker. If Federico Higuain had made comments to reporters saying, I think my time in Columbus is done because I hate Justin Merrim or something like that, I think we would be having a much different conversation than what we're having now, which is basically Higuain saying, yeah, you know, I think this is the end of the road for me in Columbus, which is a fairly standard comment from athletes, I think. So I'm not so concerned about that. As for whether or not he stays or goes, I hope that they can convince him to stay. I think he's still a valuable player. I'm sure we're going to talk about the way the team performed later on, but I think this team misses Higuain a lot when he's not out there. He is the creative engine of this team, and I think he can continue to perform for years to come. If he's got some sort of a recurring injury that's going to keep him out long term, or where he's only going to be able to play 50% of games or something like that, then maybe it's time to look elsewhere. But if there is any way possible that we can get even 75% of the games played with Federico Higuain, I think you try your best to keep him because he is such an integral part of the system and this team.
Well, and I think the questions we have to ask, and you know, who knows if we'll get these answered or not, but you know, where these conversations came from. You know, did this start with Greg approaching Federico? Did it start with Federico approaching Greg? You know, and what was said? Because you know, if it's an injury thing, hey, you know, this is the second year in a row this has happened. You're missing more and more time. You know, maybe it's a money thing because of that. You know, I don't know. This all seemed rather strange to me because of the timing of it all. I think that, you know, obviously he's trying to work his way back from the injury. He seemed very happy with the team this year. You know, results aside, I think that, you know, this is a place he's always expressed liking to be, like being, his family's here, things like that. And Greg's always said nothing but great things. You know, obviously he's been kind of a cornerstone for Greg Berhalter's system. So, you know, to announce something like this here with a third of the season still to play, and with him, you know, assumedly coming back here in the next, you know, few games, hopefully, I find it very strange. And the quotes were even, you know, there was no definitiveness, as we've mentioned. You know, I don't know Federico's tone when he was talking to Andrew and Michael Aries, but, you know, it didn't come across as a super positive one. And I haven't talked to Andrew since last week, so I'll find out more from him tomorrow. But, you know, it just seems strange to me that this would come out now and kind of in the way it came out, not, you know, we're sending off Federico. We want to send Federico off at the end of this season or anything like that. He just kind of made a comment that he thinks, you know, his time has come. And, you know, that just, for a guy who's still performing well, that seems like a strange thing to put out there right now, I guess.
And, you know, I have no inside information about any of this, but you mentioned the injuries, and I wonder if part of it might be that he's not been happy with his recovery or something like that. I know that there have been players with other teams in the U.S. and around the world who have wanted to move on because they felt they haven't been getting the right medical attention, or they feel like they're being forced back too soon or something like that. So it could just be that maybe he's concerned about the future of his career and he wants to try to go get medical help from a different set of physios or something like that. But yeah, it's definitely strange. I really have no idea beyond that. He seems happy here, so who knows?
Yeah, I can't figure it out, because if you look around on social media, he's constantly, I remember even 2012 when Jairo Arrieta was still here, and we had a decent amount of Argentinian contingent. I know Jairo's Costa Rican, but, you know, they would always grill out, and they were having a great time, and now ever since Gaston Sarro's been here, it seems like they've been palling around and really enjoying Columbus. That being said, though, I mean, kind of touching back on, not to beat a dead horse, but the whole way that somebody presents something, touching back on that Kai Pipa thing, you know, the way Kai presented it was terrible. He could have gone a million different ways about saying it. It was in the heat of the moment and all that stuff. You know, Pipa's coming out and saying, you know, he's given proper notice and just packaging it a little nicer. It still stinks to swallow that pill.
But is that even the forum to do? I mean, I understand it's within his right and he's going to, you know, he's doing it and to an extent, you know, you appreciate a fair notice or something like that. The 2-week warning era that we've been characterizing it as. But if you're a coach, if you're management, you don't want any of this playing out in the media, not in the middle of a tough road trip coming out of the break, a team that's underperforming, a coach that's under pressure, certainly from the fan base. And, you know, you've got Ola Kamara questioning Greg Berhalter's system, and now you've got Pipa Higuaín, your designated player, saying he's done after this season. What does that say? I mean, how many players domestic? It would be tough. I think that's a tough sell on a player if you've got knowledge of the situations that you're coming in to go into and say, that's an organization that looks like it's got everything in order, and that's where I want to go. And now Pedro Santos, I'm not sure. I don't know how familiar he is with Columbus, but I think these are a little bit, you know, red flags. I'm not, you know, part of the Zach Berhalter cohort, but these are serious concerns, I think, for the organization right now, that this kind of stuff is coming out of the locker room, because usually that's supposed to be kept within it.
Yeah, it's – well,
go ahead, Pat.
I agree. I think that the timing of it's very weird. And, you know, it may be nothing. I think that, you know, the fact that, you know, the way it seemed to plan out based on how I read Andrew's stuff was that they talked to Greg, they talked to Federico, and Federico made these comments – And they brought Greg back out so that they could ask him about this, because obviously this was, you know, a revelation to everybody. So I think the fact that Federico felt the need to put it out there, now, you know, we don't know everything he was asked during the interview. There is a transcription of these quotes on the Dispatch's website that you can read. But, you know, it's not the full interview. It's just the questions that pertain to, you know, this topic. But, you know, what Federico's thoughts were on putting this out. You know, I know he's a pretty honest guy normally. So, you know, but this isn't something that I expect, you know, he didn't put out there without thinking about it. You know, but with that said, he's always been very respectful for Greg, and things like that. So, you know, I didn't initially take this as a shot at Berhalter, but it certainly isn't, you know, from the outside, it certainly doesn't look like a great thing to have your, you know, highest paid player, your key attacking piece, you know, saying he's done and not really giving a ton of explanation behind it, I guess.
And, I mean, my argument to this is, I mean, we hear stuff come out of locker rooms in Europe all the time, but, you know, it is alarming, I think, that, you know, Higuaín sitting there using the press as a soundboard.
Yeah, isn't the Mail.
What's that?
This isn't the Daily Mail. I mean, it's...
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's a great point, too. But, you know, it's... I think it's tough that he's having this discussion with him in this season and using this avenue. You know, and this can be complete speculation, but even to touch on the Ola thing for a second, you know, Alex Steck asked him in an interview last week about how he's felt kind of how he's been in this new system. And the fact of the matter is he's touching the ball more than he ever has in the old 4-2-3-1 system, but he's asked to do different things. So if we go back to Higuaín for a second and we go into this philosophy change that Berhalter's had with this formation, is Berhalter asking Higuaín when he is healthy to do something that he might not be comfortable with? You know, and like Patrick said, I mean, I've had the privilege of talking to Pipa. He's a great guy. He's very understanding, very upfront with you. I don't see him being necessarily malicious, but man, the ambiguity behind these comments is crazy, I think.
See, I'm just not so concerned about it. I think when you have a player who's been here for, what, 5 years now? I think it's 5 years, right? Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. But he's been here a while. He's been here longer than basically anybody else on the roster. And he's earned the fans' respect. I think he's considered by a lot of fans to be one of the best players to have ever worn a Columbus Crew shirt.
I think he will be in the circle of honor one day, not to interrupt you.
I think he will too. And I think if all he's saying is, my time's up, guys, I think I'm going to move back to Argentina or find another team or whatever, that seems completely reasonable. We've had tons of players move on from this team and from this league. And, you know, we had guys go to China and all over the place in this league, big name players. And so for Higuain to say, yeah, I think my time is up here, as long as he's not saying anything bad about the organization, about his teammates, about the coach, anything like that, I don't find it particularly destabilizing. If he had done it in a different way, I think it could have been. But the way he did it made me, you know, feel like, okay, he thinks his time is up here. Greg's going to try to convince him otherwise. They've got, you know, a couple months to kind of work it out. If they can't work it out, he'll be able to move on in the off season. He's still training. He's still doing all that stuff. He's not causing problems for the team, as far as I'm concerned. If he was going at a teammate or something like Kai did, I think it would be a different thing, because then you would have players taking sides. But I don't think Higuain is putting anybody in a position where they have to take sides. I don't think he's destabilizing anything. And so I hope he gets well soon, and hopefully they can get it worked out, because I want to see him back here next season.
Certainly, I think there are a lot of people that are on board with you on that sentiment. Looking at the other end of the field and stepping out away from some of the speculation to some things that we know true facts, among those being Columbus's 2-1 loss last weekend to San Jose on the road. Now, as Ralph pointed out to us in the rundown, a negative 12 goal differential on the road for Columbus. They conceded 20 shots on target, or 20 shots total in that game. And I believe between that and the Real Salt Lake game, I think that's two consecutive games with conceding 20 shots, albeit not all of them on target. And this one, a game that really it didn't seem like they had too much of a legitimate chance ever at any point. San Jose got a lot of good chances, got out to their 2-0 lead, and you get a late goal from Adam John that's comforting Patrick. But what is there, the good and the bad, to take away from that game on Saturday?
Well, I think the good is that you created some good chances early. And you mentioned, you know, San Jose certainly had their chances, especially in the later part of the first half and in the second half. But, you know, you get, and we've talked about this a lot this year, the chances that aren't, you know, taken advantage of. And, you know, Ola Kamara gets one on a nice build-up play. I think the final pass from Kukudamane takes a long first touch that ends up with Bingham. But, you know, you capitalize on that, get a shot, potentially a goal. You know, we're talking something different. And then, you know, he has another chance later, a sliding chance at the back door that he just can't make contact with. And, you know, for all the good we have to say about Ola, you know, if he were a clinical finisher or a guy who had, you know, an elite first touch, I don't think he would be on this team, which is something I kind of put out there on Saturday night. So, you know, you kind of have to take those moments from Ola where, you know, he's not going to be the perfect striker, because, you know, he's in MLS and there's a reason that he's here. Not to take anything away from the rest of this league, obviously you'd like him to be on top of his game all the time, but, you know, you'd like to see him finish those chances, because that might have changed the game. But, you know, after those two, there really wasn't a ton for Columbus until, you know, they already found themselves down. The goal that San Jose scored came off another mistake from Jonathan Mensah. Again, things we've talked about a lot on this podcast. Gives it away at midfield, falls down, and is unable to recover. And, you know, the field at Avaya Stadium, a lot of people were falling. And I've heard really good things about that stadium and playing there and whatnot, but it did not look fun to play on Saturday night. But giving the ball away nonetheless.
Falling and giving the ball away isn't a new development for John Mensah.
No, but as Colin Johnson pointed out in his breakdown of that goal, that first goal today, you know, Jonathan does a really poor job of recover. He recovers, but he recovers kind of aimlessly, you know, just kind of runs back to the box, never tracks to his man, doesn't pick up anyone else, and is just not really in a good position when the shot is taken. And, you know, Alex Crenali obviously gets beat there on a bad touch, but you know, a tough angle and whatnot, and a fortunate goal a little bit, but, you know, we keep talking about these mistakes with Columbus, and, you know, the second goal was just kind of, you know,
That looked like Nico Ness had blown his man, too.
Yeah, I think you could probably blame a few people on that, but with the amount of pressure San Jose was putting on the team, it was just a matter of time until the Earthquakes scored again. And, you know, Adam John gets a consolation goal, which is nice for him to finally get on the board, especially against his former team. But, you know, it's, you know, obviously no points again on the road. A tough place to play. San Jose's obviously been really good. We talked about that last week on the road, but or at home. But, you know, this was a game that I thought if Columbus capitalized on the chances early, they'd walk out with at least a point or, you know, maybe three.
All right. Hey, Bart, I would
I was just watching that. We have a little bit of news to break on the podcast.
All right, and, Ralph, here we go. As about six minutes ago, according to Columbus Crew SC, on their Twitter page and various other forms of social media, they have posted a teaser with Pedro Santos walking out of the tunnel at Moffray Stadium with Prepare Say, which I, for my Portuguese friends, would need a translation. I'm assuming that that means prepare yourself and get excited. They must have just heard the podcast. Shout out to the PR department for listening to us. Appreciate it.
And for their time travel abilities.
But yeah, it looks like it is all but 100% certain. If you guys do like to see this, I know you you know, won't see this for about a day, but head over to the Massive Report Twitter page. We have retweeted
it. Could be
it.
Quicker if you get the podcast up on time.
I am going to get the podcast up as quickly as possible with today's news. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.
It means get ready. That's what the translation means. It means get ready.
Alex Danick, the world traveler, ladies and gentlemen.
Pumped. I am pumped.
It's real quick on this before we go back to the game. It's very, I mean, obviously, you know, from everything we understand, this will be their third DP signing and whatnot. But, you know, it's interesting that they're really building this up. And I wonder the reasoning behind that, you know, if, you know, they're really that excited about bringing in a player here, or if it's the, you know, the pressure from the fans. Obviously, there's been a lot of tweeting at Precourt about, you know, why aren't we making summer signings, things like that. So, you know, I don't know if they're making this into as big of a deal because of those things or because they really buy that this is a, it's a big thing. We didn't see this kind of social media, you know, presentation when they brought in Jonathan Mensah. And, you know, I know the feelings on him now, but at the time, this that looked like a really good signing. So, I don't know. Interesting.
It was also the dead of winter, though.
Yeah, well, that's a good time to try and get people excited about your sport instead of middle of the season, I would think. But it's just, I don't know, interesting that they're selling it like this. You know, obviously you want to get people excited, especially coming off a loss. So anyway, just my thoughts.
No, certainly a loss, and a loss that takes Columbus now just 2 points north of Orlando City, again, who has just one game in hand. For that final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference.
And crew fans should really be thanking Orlando for continuing to just be miserable because they've had about 5 weeks here where they could have jumped over Columbus and continue to stumble when the chances are there. So,
and I know I'm going to make Alex mad. They should thank Atlanta, too, because Atlanta's been responsible for derailing Orlando's hopes as well. So that's my piece.
And Atlanta, of course, Atlanta getting 6 points against Columbus in their two opportunities this season. But, you know, moving forward for this team, you did one of the at least somewhat positive in that game is getting something from Adam John, a goal. And, you know, looking at this, looking if Pedro is going to be the signing of the transfer window for Columbus, as in the only one, then at least it's encouraging, I think, moving forward to see Adam John get on the board. But still a lot of a lot on this game that it has become very familiar, and I did double check it, and it is, again, two straight games that they've conceded 20 shots, which is, I don't know, I'm not going to go back in crew history to tell you the last time, and it might happen more common than it feels like it does, but, you know, for a team that a couple weeks ago we were talking about when you had those consecutive clean sheets is, oh, have they fixed all the problems there on the back end, and they're winning games 1-0, and to see them hemorrhaging these opportunities over the during this road stand, I guess it's encouraging that they're making their way back home soon.
Yeah, and traditionally during the State Fair road trip, I don't think we've done very well, but this, I believe, was the 17th different combination I think we've used in terms of back lines. And, you know, it... Nico Ness, man, that poor guy, I mean, he looks okay, but, I mean, Menso was doing all right. Crenali was tired. I mean, the poor guy's played every minute of every game for, like, the last five that we've had. But I'll tell you,
no one looked good.
Yeah, no one looked good. Except Zach Steffens. You know, Zach Steffens, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, the whole thing that I'm going to be excited about, and I'm going to shift, I'm going to go Sunshine Brigade here, so get ready, Alex. I need you. Is Kakuta Mane and Justin Mira. They seem to be having quite the little bit of chemistry developing between the two of them. You know, Patrick alluded earlier to that nicely weighted through ball that Kakuta had to Ola. Unfortunately, too heavy of a touch that went straight to Bingham. But Mira and Kakuta seem that they're playing off of each other quite nicely. And they seem to really start to hit their stride over the past couple of games, which is encouraging.
But if you've got Pipe Higuain and Pedro Santos ostensibly entering the picture, are those two players that are even going to be able to play with each other that often the rest of the campaign?
Depth's a terrible problem to have, Bart, but, you know, it's something that this team lacked last year, and I'm really happy that we have about five or six different players that can step into different positions.
I think you mentioned Justin Merrim, and I think we should touch on him real quick because, you know, since that really hot start to the season where he gets to 8 goals and, you know, is on the career high, he's really been, you know, I don't want to say a letdown because he's still playing fine, but, you know, not scoring, only 1 goal since, I believe, that Montreal game. I'd have to look that up. But, you know, sitting on 9 goals now, which is only one more than he had before we were even talking All-Star game. And, you know, this past game, it looked like he was really pressing to try and do a lot. You know, he was dribbling far too much when there were guys to pass to. You know, I just thought it was a very old school Justin Merrim game for a guy who seemed to have come along quite a bit. And I'm concerned a bit here. You know, we've talked about Ethan Finley obviously struggling and whatnot, and you know, we thought we had a consistent Justin Merrim with the way he was playing early in the season, but Justin's always been a streaky player. And, you know, maybe that was just a hot streak that he was on early on. And, you know, obviously he's a considerably better player than he was a few years ago, and, you know, he continues to develop and whatnot. But if you're not getting goals from Ethan Finley, and, you know, obviously we'll see what happens with Pedro, but you're not getting goals from Ethan Finley, you're getting a little bit from Kakuta Mane, Federico Higuain's not out, Ola Kamara's still adjusting to a change in formation. You know, Justin Merrim's a guy who seems to be comfortable in this role and is just, you know, not really producing a ton. You know, he did have a few nice passes and things like that in this game, but just not enough for my book. And, you know, I thought, I don't want to say a selfish game, but, you know, not the type of game we became accustomed to from Justin from the beginning of the season.
Well, something, you know, I don't want to say overlooked, but as you point out, Alex Stanek, that was maybe undercovered last weekend, was the anniversary, 5-year anniversary of the death of Kirk Urso, number 15, former Columbus Crew player, who passed away during the 2012 season unexpectedly. And I know this issue, for you especially, Alex, has been pretty important. I know for all of us, you know, we miss him as fans. That was the game after that. At home in Nordic was one of those moments that you'll never forget. But this weekend, and as we move further away, it seems like it's further back pushed in the memory.
Yeah, I think one of the issues with Major League Soccer in general is that you have so much kind of turnover of staff, and also you have turnover of fans. You know, you have new fans every year, and you have fewer and fewer fans who were around in 2012. But yeah, it was a horrible event, and brought us together as a family. And you know, the crew used to have this motto, you know, we're more than a team, we're a family, or something like that. I can't remember what words they used exactly, but it was true. It was true then. I think it's true now. I think we are a family, and it's a tight-knit little community that we have here, and we lost a member of our family that day. And yeah, I just wanted to bring it up because I do think it's important that people remember and that he gets remembered this week, and his family gets, you know, our thoughts and prayers and all of that. This weekend, I talked a little bit about it on Twitter. I did a little mini tweet storm, I guess. But I still believe, and it becomes even more important to me every year, that they should retire the number 15 shirt. It's been unofficially retired since Kirk passed away. Nobody's worn it. I don't think there's been any talk of anybody wearing it even. But I think they should make it official. You do have the staff turnover, and somebody at some point in the future, 40 years from now, might forget about it and let some superstar have it or something like that. But we really shouldn't forget what happened, and we should remember it and keep Kirk and his family in our thoughts and prayers. So if anybody in the front office is listening, I hope they'll consider that. Consider retiring the number permanently. Other players around the league have had their numbers retired. Jason Kreis for Real Salt Lake springs to mind. His number 9 shirt was retired,
which is weird considering the majority of his good playing days occurred in Dallas.
That was definitely a weird one. There is this tradition in sports, I think, that when you have somebody who leaves an indelible mark in your franchise, in your team, you retire that number. And I do think Kirk left an indelible mark. I hope that as a team we never go through that ever again. Most teams, even teams that have been around 100-plus years, never go through anything like that. And so because it happened to us, I think he should be remembered and honored, and that they should retire that number. So I said my bit. If you agree or disagree with me, let me know. Let Anthony Precourt know. Let the team know that you want it to be retired or that you don't. But I count me firmly in the retire camp, because I don't think anybody should ever wear that shirt again.
Yeah, and the team's taken, I don't know if it's been, you know, the player that I can think of most recently that had the chance to wear the number 15 shirt was Chris Clouty a couple years ago when he was on the team, because he came over from Colorado and wore the 15 shirt for Colorado and changed to 3. You know, so I don't know if they sat him down and had an explanation of what the number means. But, you know, to remember, you know, about your club, a good indication of where you're going is, you know, honoring your history. And I think definitely Kirk, you know, albeit he was a younger gentleman, that he was kind of an integral part of the crew and during a part of, you know, the growing pains, you know, through a portion of where we're at today. You know, without perhaps his generation, we might have not gotten to MLS Cup final in 2015. So I think he was very instrumental. And, you know, you look at other tragedies in football, you know, if you want to go way back and look at the Busby Babes from Manchester United, or look at Chapionce's, recently as last year, unfortunately, that tragedy, and how it brought people together. I think when Kirk passed, much like Alex said, it definitely brought the fan base together and really made us become more of a tight-knit family.
And you know, just something from my perspective, you know, Kirk was a guy who was before I started covering the team, but, you know, was someone right about my age at the time. You know, actually the night that he collapsed at the bar, I'd been at the bar earlier that night and had seen some of the crew guys out there. So it's a really weird thing to think that that's been 5 years. And last year for the anniversary, I did a big thing, talked to Ethan Finley, who was fairly close with Kirk and his family. And you know, Ethan, it's one of the more, and Ethan's one of the guys on the team who's very forthcoming, but it was one of the most honest and raw interviews I've ever done with anyone. But Ethan specifically, you know, you could tell that it was, you know, certainly something that he thinks about. You know, he wasn't just, let me talk about the guy that I played with that, you know, I only got to know for a short period of time, but a guy he obviously really cared about, and, you know, that left an impact on him. And I think it left an impact on a lot of Crew fans. You know, I still wear the Kirk Urso wristband, all the writing's worn off, but, you know, it's just, you know, it's a crazy thing. And to be a part of not only the Crew community, but the Columbus community as a whole got behind the team after that. They did do a nice job of honoring it. And I think, as Alex pointed out, that's something that shouldn't be forgotten as new ownership and players and, you know, management and staff and things kind of transition. You know, that's something you've got to keep as part of your history and someone you should honor in some way or another.
Absolutely. You know, not as in someone who will remain, regardless of that, a indelible mark for Crew fans and people who are around and at this time, at this anniversary, when it is around that time, pretty tough for the family. We do give them all of our thoughts. This transition is hard as it might be on a note like that. There's still maybe to something a little bit more lighthearted and look at some of our questions on the Massive Report from some of our followers. And we've got one coming up here actually related to the news that we sort of broke earlier during this recording that you will hear after the fact. But Norman Groves asks, with the upcoming homestand being so vital for Crew's playoff hopes, that homestand, which begins with the Chicago Fire this weekend, what does that mean for the addition of Pedro? Do you think he will be fast-tracked into the starting 11?
I think it's always hard when you bring in a new player, you know, to incorporate him into a starting 11 that quickly. I think, I mean, it also depends. Let's remember, he's in preseason, I believe. They just started their season. So, you know, he's got to kind of catch up to where this team is. We remember what happened with Kakuta Mane coming in, and he's a guy who had, you know, been through a handful of weeks with Vancouver. So I imagine that, you know, this is a guy that I think they'll want to get on the field. I don't know if it'll necessarily be in a starting role right away, but, you know, it also depends how they're going to play, I think, against Chicago. And we'll talk on this more later, but, you know, the three in the back, they've had some success with Justin and Kakuta kind of finding their rhythm there. You know, do you vary from that if it, obviously assuming Federico Higuain still is not ready to go, but, yeah, I imagine he's a guy who will kind of work his way in this week, coming, you know, through training and then coming off the bench and see how it goes from there, and, you know, kind of weigh a starting spot, you know, going forward after the Chicago game.
I would be kind of shocked if he has any big part to play this weekend. Like Murph said, he's not going to be fully fit, and he's also not going to have that much time with his teammates, so he would be kind of out on an island a little bit, I would imagine. I do think, like we mentioned earlier, I do wonder if they're kind of making this a little bit, trying to build up the hype on the signing a little bit. So it would not surprise me if he came off the bench for 10 or 15 minutes, but in terms of a starting spot, I would be totally shocked if they did that. But you never know, but I really, really doubt it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at players that have just come into the league, a couple of the DP signings that have been signed, Yoshi in Orlando and Jonathan Dos Santos in L.A., I can think of immediately. Yoshi hasn't even seen the field yet for Orlando, but Jonathan Dos Santos started in the 18 on Sunday against Portland. And was I don't even I'm not even entirely sure if he saw the pitch on Sunday, but you know, I'm always been a fan of kind of the gradual introduction of a player, not necessarily the baptism by fire. But I think, you know, you'll see Pedro get in there. You know, who knows? I could be completely wrong. He could get the Artur treatment and get, you know, thrown in the lineup and learn the hard way. But
he didn't even start the first game. He still came off the bench.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
also against the Fire.
Yeah, that's what we do. We debut new players against the Fire this year. But you know, I think I wouldn't be surprised to see him come off the bench a couple times before, if he cracks the starting 11, which I'm assuming he would. You're putting big money out for a player like this. You know, I assume it probably wouldn't be for maybe 2 or 3 weeks.
So, staying on kind of the playoff, looking toward the playoffs, David Schaefer asks, guessing we need 18 points from our last 10 games to secure a playoff spot, we being, of course, Columbus Crew SC, think we can get them. For a little reference for those of y'all listening, with 24 games played, 10 left, Columbus with 32 points, 2 ahead of Orlando for that 6th and final playoff spot. Last year, you only need the 6th-seeded team, although I believe they won on goal differential, only needed 42 points. The year before, 2015, Toronto got in with the 6th seed with 49 points. So they're asking, looking at that around 50-point threshold. Do you think that's something Columbus can do? Six at home for that final stretch, but the last two games of the season are on the road.
Yeah, it's pivotal. I mean, you know, everybody who's in this field has made a pretty big deal about the 6 of the next 8 are going to be at home, you know, and, you know, I think it's pivotal that you convert your home points. And I mean, this season, Crew SC has been very good at home. They haven't been great, but, you know, they've done well, and they've done what you need to do to take care of business in MLS. And that's always been how the league's been. If you're moderately good at home and you're subpar away, you can sneak into the playoffs. Now,
the Crew aren't just subpar away. They've got, you pointed it out, Ralph, 9 losses, tied with DC United for most in MLS.
Well, I mean, and you can, a way that you could say that, Bart, is you can lop them in, you know, the LA Galaxy, who are kind of in bizarro world right now, where they're 1-6-4 at home. And they're tearing it up on the road, you know, so they're abysmal at home, but they're doing okay. You just have to be about 60-40 and get some points. I mean, if Crew SC starts tying more games, I think that definitely would be a little bit better. But I think 18 points is attainable in these last couple matches.
Crew are tied for 3rd most road wins, just FYI. I think the benchmark that they should look at is going into those final 2 road games. If you sit somewhere between 45 and 48 points, I think you feel okay, because I don't know if you can safely say you're going to win. You know, it would be tough, I guess, to ask them to go on the road and win those final 2 games to get a playoff spot. So I think, you know, if you want to try and be comfortable, hopefully, you know, as you mentioned, Bart, you know, nothing's guaranteed with these points. It's changed year to year, and obviously the East is very good right now. But with the way Orlando's played recently, you know, obviously they could turn things around. But Philly's starting to get a little hot. I think that, you know, somewhere in that range would put you in an okay spot going into those final 2 games, and that means getting results at home here over these next, like you said, Ralph, six of the next 8 at home.
A good spot, maybe, but you also look at those teams that you play in those final 2 road games. Orlando, a team that, you know, is neck and neck right now with Columbus, even those who pointed out struggling. And then NYCFC, who, you know, maybe the best thing Columbus has got going, if they've got to, you know, really capture points on the road in that final game, is that they, NYC, will have pretty much wrapped up, or should have, if they continue along the path and trajectory they are right now, should have that one of those spots locked down. Looking at, or Alex, did you want to weigh in on that one?
No, I'm okay.
You good?
Thanks, though.
Well, you know, Bart, what you said, too, with Orlando is this isn't going to be the same team we saw on April Fool's Day, ironically. You know, you're going to have your Dom Dwyer. Presumably Kyle Larin, if he doesn't leave, even though I know a couple clubs have been inquiring about him. And their new DP that they brought in is, in addition to Rivas Spector, I mean, it's a good squad, so I mean, it's not really going to be a gimme for them either.
It's a good squad that can't figure out how to play offense right now.
That is true.
Speaking of squads that can't figure out how to play offense, I'm going to kind of combine a couple of questions in here. First one being, why is New England so bad? And second one being, do you guys think Jay Heaps, New England coach or manager, should be fired?
I will take this one. This is from a good friend of mine, Maddie, from 6 Days, One Podcast. If you guys want to listen to a good soccer podcast, those guys run a very nice ship over there. He's quite frustrated with, ironically, our old striker, Kai Kamara.
Didn't Kai score twice this weekend?
Yeah, they're frustrated with him over there, though. But, you know, they've got really great expectations over there. And I know they've been gunning for Jay Heap's head for quite some time.
Interesting that they have such high expectations, considering they've made the playoffs once in the last, 4 or 5 years?
They want the Crafts fired. They want MLS to take the lead from the Crafts.
I think that should absolutely happen. I just want to advocate taking teams away from Bob Kraft at any opportunity, any venue I have.
Bob Kraft is going to, number one, outlive all of us, and he's going to maintain control of the New England Revolution until this league dissolves.
Who lives longer, Jerry Jones or Bob Kraft?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Tom Brady.
That's a scorching hot take. I like it.
New England's bad for a lot of reasons. I don't think we have time to get into all of them, but they've assembled a team that doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
I hope that Jay Heaps never leaves, because Jay Heaps is really one of my favorite coaches to watch when something bad happens for his team.
He learned from the best in Coach K at Duke.
Ben Olsen is probably my number one. Angry Ben Olsen is really hard to beat.
What about angry Mike Petke?
But I actually really like Petke, so I mean, for me, I don't enjoy seeing him upset. I want Petke to do well, but I like seeing Ben Olsen do poorly, number one, because he gets angry. And then Ben Olsen's got this face when something goes bad for him, where he feels like the universe is conspiring against him. And Jason Christ is very similar. Those are kind of tied for my number two. And like, if something bad is going to happen to a team, if they're going to get a bad penalty call or something like that, I want it to be Ben Olsen number one, but then Jay Heaps is number two. So no, I hope Jay Heaps stays forever. I hope he's the coach until he's 75 years old.
Well, see, my favorite, too, is Adrian Heath when he gets a dumbfounded look on his face when something goes wrong for Minnesota. That always I get a nice enjoyment.
So he just constantly has a dumbfounded look on his face?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
We've got this one, and Ralph, we might have to ask you to weigh in as our Crew SC podcast liaison. Darbs, token liberal, asks, when the podcast wars begin, will you be the side throwing sandwich boards or the side yelling, "Who are ya?"
I told old Darby Thursday when we made a cameo on Aces Radio, if you haven't listened yet, Massive Report invaded Aces Radio. Fast forward to segment 3 because everything else is hot garbage on that podcast. But I told Darby Thursday when we were there that, you know, they had the chance to get at us. And I'm still here talking to you. So, you know, I believe I'd like to think I'd be slinging trash bags at him.
Well, and then our final question, and this is going to segue into our next final segment. Joe Cromwell, Captain Crommy 262, asks, how will it feel to lose to Chicago Fire 97 this weekend?
I'm not embarrassed, they're good, but
it's tough to lose to a team that was founded incorrectly on Twitter.
Heyo.
I just never understood the 97 thing. Like, I don't understand Quake 74. I don't understand whatever Colorado's is 96. There's one other team in the league that does that. Like, it just stick with the year you actually came into the league.
Well, I don't like Montreal's because it's Impact IMF. Tom Cruise, Mission Impossible,
It's
FC. Well, and then also,
French, Ralph. It's just French.
Why isn't it BF 97? That doesn't make sense either.
Heyo.
I get it, because they're the Bridgeview Fire, and that is what we have coming on Columbus, hosting Bridgeview for, I believe, the third time this season.
Third and final
meeting. Yep. On Saturday. And a big game back on the friendly confines of the Tiny Demon Fortress. And, fellas, what do you think we got in store for us?
Who is this guy who is this thing?
Captain Crommy 262.
Captain Crommy 262. Let me tell you how it's going to go.
Oh, dear.
Let me tell you how
Watch
it's going to
go. He's a husband, stepdad, farmer, runner, operator. He's an operate shit.
I'm sure he's a lovely guy. I'm sure he's a lovely guy. But... Everybody seems convinced that we are going to lose to Chicago. And last time I remember everybody being convinced we were going to lose to somebody, it was LA Galaxy 2014. And everybody thought we were going to get killed.
The 5-0 game, wasn't it? Or 4-0.
4-1. 4-1, sorry. It was 4-1. And I don't know. I mean, we can put on these great performances. So I think Columbus Crew SC is going to shock the world and beat the Chicago Fire by a significant margin, but I'm going to save my prediction for the end, for the prediction segment.
Yes!
Absolutely.
Yes. I think results aside, and we'll get into that, you know, fans should be excited for this game. Bastian Schweinsteiger, obviously a world-class player at one point in his career, a guy who's... I said it. A guy who's exceeded my expectations already for what he's done in MLS. You know, I thought the physicality
on the field.
Exactly. I thought the physicality of this league, the travel in this league would kind of wear on him, and maybe it will, you know, in future years, but I didn't expect him to have the year and the impact that he's had on the Fire. You know, they'd put together a pretty solid team before. We obviously saw them twice before Schweinsteiger signed, and you know, a win for Chicago and a tie, but I think that Bastian's added something, you know, different that they weren't going to get out of that midfield, even with the additions of Janino and McCarty, you know. So I think it'll be fun to watch. I'm really looking forward to seeing him play in person. He's always been a guy that I liked his style. It should be cool. You know, it's not often you get to have. I mean, it's becoming more often, I guess, with today's MLS, but it hasn't been that often where you get to see these guys come into a place like Mapfre Stadium. And even some of them still choose not to for some strange reason.
Didier Drogba? No, wait, he's been there.
Juninho?
You know,
Juninho.
I'm excited for Chicago because, I mean, I've seen a lot of them on TV. I'm really becoming a progressive fan of Nikolic. I really like how he plays the game. And, you know, Schweinsteiger... in case you guys didn't know out there in radio land, Murph and I root for the Red Devils, otherwise known as the best team ever in Europe. Sorry, Bart. but, you know, Schweinsteiger couldn't stay healthy.
I don't even consider him having played for United.
Yeah, I mean, it's more of Bayern Munich. We just skipped the United years. But moving on, you know, it was just kind of an interesting transition. And then, you know, David Akam has really grown a lot this year. They had Kennedy Abaninike a couple years ago, and I thought those two really hit it off. I'd be curious to see how he'd do on the right side. But, you know, and their youngsters are great too. Kapelhoff and Polster, and, you know, Matty Lampson, Upper Arlington's finest, is doing, you know, a really nice job between the posts.
Matt Lampson is not Upper Arlington.
Yeah, Bart's not going to give you that one.
He's Hilliard.
Hilliard?
He's Hilliard, okay. Dublin area, but Hilliard.
I don't play Matt Lampson. Back.
But I mean, he's doing well too. After, you know, he was the third string at one point on this team, and mm-hmm. you know, it's really nice to see him kind of turn things around.
It really is, because I felt like with Matt especially, he was one of those guys that unfortunately didn't, when he had opportunities, you know, there were the injuries, and so when you had a guy like Steve Clark who had that job locked down, first of all, Matt in the season when he had to fill in, I think performed pretty well. Everyone remembers the Thierry Henry goal, and you know, as they should, and of course, as he will always remember, because he gets to say he got scored on by Thierry Henry and gets to be on like his top 10 goal highlights. But
and he does talk about it.
Oh yeah, but he didn't. You know, it was whenever that opportunity for the backup to go in, because they're so reliant on Steve Clark. It just happened to be spans when Matt, you know, was injured, and you know, they. I think that kind of that opportunity, he didn't get the chance to seize the opportunities when he did, and so when they had to make the decision, they went with Brad Stuver, and you can question whether, you know, you look at the games that Brad Stuver's played and some of the results that he's, you know, led to, and then you look at what Matt's done in time in Chicago, and you might question that decision.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. You know, it's Matt's, you know, and he wasn't handed an easy deck either, because I mean, he wasn't really dealing with a great Chicago squad for the mm-hmm. first couple of years there, and it you know, some can make the argument he doesn't have a good Chicago squad unless Bastian Schweinsteiger steps in for him. And there's no doubt that he's been a difference maker. And Dax McCarty, I mean, I'm really starting to question the Red Bulls' move with letting Dax McCarty go, especially with how they performed in the New York Derby yesterday.
Are we saying that New York Red Bulls made a bad decision? That's shocking. They never do that.
No, not the 2008 Western Conference champions.
Hey, I miss Matt Lampson because, number one, Lampstrong Foundation is one of the best things to have ever come out of Major League Soccer. It's awesome. And you should support them financially if you have the means to do so, even though he plays for Chicago. But also, Matt had a series of videos that the crew produced where he went to the zoo and he read animal facts about various animals like kangaroos and stuff like that.
He knows all that stuff. I mean, his family, they've got so many pets, different pets.
Yeah, it was good content. So, yeah, we miss you, Matt. But Artur's going to put three past you this weekend. So we'll see.
His off-the-post segments when he was here were second to none, but they only got superseded this year between Alex Crenali and Zach Steffen.
Yeah, that the bromance buddy comedy is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, 6 shutouts on the year. That's pretty impressive.
Well, and you look at this Chicago team, not only obviously has Matt and have they been solid on the back end, just 25 goals conceded, which is, I believe, the third lowest amount, but with their 44 goals scored, tops in MLS. On the road, they've struggled 2-5-4, but they've managed to pick up some points. But this is, you guys mentioned Nikolic, you mentioned David Akam. This is a team that's produced a lot, and they've been very dangerous offensively, in part because they've been able to control the middle of the field so well. And do you see that as a red flag for Columbus and a team that right now is showing that they're struggling a lot on the defensive end, albeit on the road?
I think the midfield that you brought up is going to be very key, because that's where Chicago's attacks come from. They like the speed of Akam up top and the playmaking ability they have in there. You know, obviously Columbus want to possess the ball. They've done a very poor job in these last few games. Now, some of that has to do with, you know, given situations like being down a man and then being down two men against Philly, being fatigued and looking to kind of sit back against RSL. But, you know, I think that you need to see Columbus kind of get back to playing, you know, the free-flowing possession soccer to try and keep some of Chicago's weapons off the ball. We saw in Chicago when they first went to, you know, a kind of different look there that, you know, that wasn't too effective. That was the 4-3-3 game, and they changed out of that in the second half. So, you know, this is going to be an interesting game, and I think, you know, they've got to be real wary of that Chicago midfield, which then leads to the Chicago attack. And I'm saying Chicago as many times as possible in hopes that Chris listens to this podcast.
Chicago.
Yeah, they're the Bridgeview Fire. They play in Bridgeview. Fellas, is there anything else that really sticks out about the Chicago game, or anything that we want to flag ahead of it that they won't, Chris won't cover, perhaps, in Massive Match Day later this week, which you can hear if you subscribe to the Massive Report podcast?
I think, you know, Murph hit it on it beautifully. I think this game's going to be, like I said, I think, and I've done gosh, all the scouting reports for the Chicago games now that I think about it. But again, this one's going to be no different. This game's going to be won and lost in midfield. It's going to be McCarty and Schweinsteiger against the fighting Will Trapps and the fighting Arturs. And I think Trapp and Artur are going to do a nice job. I'm going to make a bold prediction here, gentlemen. I think we're going to go back to the 4-2-3-1 for this game.
Bold.
Very, very bold. Bold move, Cotton. Well, with that, we'll let you get some more other bold predictions coming up on the other side of this plug, though, for our wonderful sponsors that you should patronize as much as you could, as you should the Matt Lamstrong Foundation. But that's the Massive Report podcast. We're brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton and the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street. Check them both out. And I'll start with some predictions. We'll get a bold prediction first from Mr. Patrick Murphy.
I don't have a good feeling about this game. You know, I've been pretty bullish on predicting positive results for the Crew at home, but I really just didn't like the way that, you know, outside of the opening 20 minutes they played at San Jose, and I think Chicago's a real good team. You know, I think they've built something that could really make a run this year. So I'm going to go with a 2-1 loss for Columbus.
2-1 loss for Crew FC per Patrick Murphy. Ralph, bold prediction, sir?
Well, you know, considering looking back on the last week that Chicago Fire basically held Real Madrid to 1-1 in penalty kick, you know, a lot of their guys are going to be tired. No, I'm kidding. You know, they had a great game against New England. They hung four on New England. You know, and we've touched on New England struggles and talking about, you know, why Jay Heaps should be fired. But I digress. Let's get back to the point here. You know, you've got talented players on the squad. The names are there with McCarty, Schweinsteiger, Juninho, Marcel Deleu or Michael Deleu. He's one that we haven't mentioned that I'm quite fond of. I'm with Murph, unfortunately. I don't see this one going the way of the black and gold on Saturday. I'm gonna go 3-1.
Ooh, 3-1. That's might be the most lopsided pick we've had all season. Alex Stanek, I know I can count on you to walk us back off the ledge and tell us why we're just going to completely destroy Bridgeview.
These guys have no faith in the Crew team. It's depressing. All right, you guys ready for this? Okay, so here's what's going to happen. First of all, we are not playing 4-2-3-1. That's not going to happen. It's going to be the 3-5 Crew again. And Lalas Abubakar is going to absolutely pocket Nikolic the entire game. He's going to do nothing. Artur is going to run circles around Grandpa Schweinsteiger. And we are coming out of this thing with a 3-1 victory. We are going to boss them in the midfield. And we are going to get three ugly, scrappy goals. And they are going to get one goal in like the 85th minute. And nobody's even going to care. It's going to be fantastic. I'll see you guys at the stadium.
Who scores for Crew SC, Alex, just out of curiosity? Does your boy Abubakar get on the board?
Yeah, Lawless is going to get a header. Let's say that. I'm saying Lawless is
Didn't you say Arthur's going to put three past Matt? How does this work?
I misspoke. Arthur to
Sorry, me, just a brace.
Okay. Arthur to me symbolizes this new Crew that we have kind of built. He is the face of
the South American Crew that we're
so
taking.
Artur is just going to facilitate these three goals by absolutely destroying Bastian Schweinsteiger for like 85 minutes. He's going to get subbed out towards the end of the game because he's going to be so pocketed by Artur.
And gaining more Instagram followers.
Ola's going to get a goal. Oh, yeah, his Instagram followers are going to go crazy. Oh, yeah.
Lawless shoves Dax McCarty into a locker.
Takes his lunch money. I like it. Ola gets one, Lawless gets one, and the final goal is going to be Justin Merrim.
Oh, that encouragement. So we got two not so high on the Crew SC. Alex, rightfully high on Crew SC. I'm not quite there, but I do have a 2-1 win for Columbus. A goal from, we'll go with Justin. I like that. I like the idea of Justin Merrim getting back on the board. And I think Pipa Higuain comes on as a sub late in the game, and he puts one in, you know, the insurance one, and Chicago pushes late, and then Higuain just stomps on their neck, and Columbus gets the win. Well, that should about wrap it up for this week. Any other parting shots, fellas?
I've got pizza coming, so I'm excited.
Pizza is good.
I'm headed to Ralph's house to eat his pizza, or the house that he's at, because he's not at his house.
Well, I'll text you directions, boys.
Thanks.
That should do for it. Well, we'll see you. Goodbye, buddies.
Africa, we stand as one, and we shall all sing this song.